Cyrus died in the summer of 529 BC, but with the dynast's natural enthusiasm for progeniture, had fathered three daughters and, more significantly, two sons. Far-sighted as ever, he had appointed the elder, Cambyses, crown prince, and the younger, Bardia, governor of Bactria. This was the largest and most important of the eastern provinces, and even though denied a Kidaris, the fluted tiara of royal power, Bardia had been exempted from paying tribute, a privilege properly befitting a king. Cambyses was to sit on the throne of the Persians, and Bardia was to be his lieutenant. No one else was to have a sniff of power. Just to press this point home, a scandalous match was arranged between Cambyses and his two elder sisters, Atessa and Roxane. A spectacle of incest without precedent in the traditions of Persia, but which set a satisfying block on the ambitions of any rival noble house. Cambyses, every bit as ambitious for conquest as his father, would turn his armies not against the tribesmen who had killed Cyrus, but towards a kingdom at the opposite end of his frontiers, rich in gold and gargantuan temples, the one great power still surviving from the old world order, and that the most timeless and celebrated of all. He would wage war on Egypt. Such a campaign, of course, could not be rushed. The might of the pharaohs may have been much diminished from its ancient splendour, having grown dependent upon the support of shiftless mercenaries, and been leached of income by overmighty temple priests, but it still posed a formidable challenge. Cambyses spent 4 years preparing for the invasion. The subject nations of the empire were leaned upon to provide tribute and levies. Ships were built, or commandeered, and a Persian king, for the first time in his country's history, became the master of a powerful navy. Intelligence was gathered and carefully analysed. When the Persians finally met the Egyptians in battle, it is said that they did so with cats pinned to their shields, reducing their opponents' archers to a state of outraged paralysis. Cats were sacred throughout Egypt. Victory was duly won. Egypt submitted. Her people hailed as Pharaoh, the great chief of the foreign lands. But the speed of Cambyses' victory had been delusive. Change in Egypt had never been a straightforward matter, and it so happened that the most pressing challenge to tame and tax the priesthood was also the most intractable. Cambyses, brutal in a way that native pharaohs had never dared to be, did succeed in forcing requisitions from the bloated estates of the temples, but the effort took him 4 years. The Egyptian priesthood came to regard Cambyses as an oppressive maniac. So too, and far more fatefully, did the Persian clan chiefs. With Cambyses' long absence in Egypt, treason began to be muttered in the clan lands of the Persians. Sensitive to the resentments of the Persian aristocracy, Bardia was also solicitous of the subject peoples, who were increasingly weighed down by the exactions of Cambyses. Whispering it to those who mattered, Bardia began to moot a startling measure. Perhaps, for 3 years, the subjects of the Persian people might be exempted from providing tribute and further levies to the king? Not that Cambyses would ever agree to that, of course. But a new king might agree. Such sedition could hardly be kept quiet for long. Spies were everywhere. Cambyses, his African conquests by now secured, woke abruptly to the menace at his rear. By early 522 BC, having set out at last on the long road back to Persia, Cambyses found himself in a desperate race against time. On the 11th of March, Bardia openly laid claim to the throne. A month later, he was being hailed as king throughout the eastern provinces. And then accident, or something very like an accident, intervened. Cambyses, as he leapt onto his horse to continue his advance through Syria, was said to have wounded himself in the thigh with his sword. Gangrene set in. Within days, he was dead.